With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Almost Famous, the podcast where I meet other people with famous family members and discuss how that has affected their journeys through life. My guest today is actress, radio DJ and voiceover artist Sophie Corbett.
What did your dad do? And we go, oh, he's a comedian. And they go, do we know him? And we go, well, yes, you might. And then what's his name? And then you go, Ronnie Corbett.
Sophie has been in the entertainment industry since she was a child and has been one of the UK's leading voiceover artists for 23 years, doing adverts for brands as diverse as L'Oreal, Ford and Carte d'Or.
My dad used to come and see me at my gigs with his cloth cap on, kind of hiding in the back.
Sophie is also a fashion designer and owns a boutique in Brighton, which very relevantly has the name Four Candles. Sophie is the daughter of the late comedian, actor, writer and broadcaster Ronnie Corbett, CBE.
My dad was an amazing cook as well. He won against Gordon Ramsay 4-1 for his crab linguine.
Ronnie came to prominence in 60s satirical comedy show The Frost Report and was best known for his work with comedy partner Ronnie Barker, and their sketch show The Two Ronnies ran for 16 years on BBC One. In later years, Ronnie had a career resurgence with appearances on Have I Got News For You and Would I Lie To You, and an incredible performance as a hyper-realised version of himself in Ricky Gervais and Stephen Merchant's sitcom Extras.
Ricky's asked me to do a sketch about being in a loo taking drugs. And then he said, Moira Stewart's my drug dealer. And Mum said, you got to do it.
I mentioned that the name of Sophie's boutique is relevantly called Four Candles because it was named after one of, if not the most famous sketch from The Two Ronnies. So, hello, Sophie.
Hello.
I'm not even going to pretend that I didn't read that entire intro out.
Man, that was fast.
And it took five different goes. But that's because your dad has done so much stuff. Would he have been happy with that intro, do you think?
I think he'd have been very happy. I think he might have told you to slow down a little bit.
Yeah. Well,
you were fast.
There are professionals. I think the speed comes from the fact there's just too much stuff, and I was unwilling to edit.
It's not. Yes, it's cool. Hello.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
And in terms of your own intro, is there anything I missed out?
No, I think that's absolutely fine.
You're happy with that?
I'm not going to make you do it again, am I?
No. I mean, this is just bullying now. You're giving me the speed. You're telling me what your dad would have said.
No, sorry, you did ask. And he would have said, that's brilliant, but you were going fast. And you'll hear that back and go, wow, that was good and quick.
More likely, I'll hear it back and redo it. I think, and then it'll be the slowest thing and everyone will be saying, oh, what is she talking about? I mentioned your boutique, Four Candles. Tell us a little bit about that for anyone who's not been.
Yes. So Four Candles. The nicest thing someone said was like, they said it's like a tiny Liberties, which I thought, I'll take that. But we actually, so it was, we had it for 5 years in a beautiful off the beaten track building in Brighton. But we shut it this summer and we're now taking it on tour. So we do pop up, which we're finding is working much better for us because of me doing voiceovers and radio and my business partner works 3 days with Brian Eno. It just means that we've got a bit of freedom then do pop up when we feel like it and go where people want to spend money rather than sit there waiting.
And if it's a smaller version of Liberty, so what does it sell? Kind of scented candles, perfumes, haberdashery?
The best scented candles. Yeah. I'm really fussy.
Okay.
I love smells, so I get them from France. Everything from polished filing cabinets to sheepskins to cowhides to perfumes to aftershave to leather to clothing to lighting to...
Wow.
It's a bit of everything.
Yeah.
I love gear. I love beautiful things from my mum and my dad, both kind of, you know, my dad was all about the cloth and the colour, and my mum too. So I've kind of grown up with a love of knowing when something's made beautifully. And Dad actually said to me years ago, you should have a, you know, a shop, because I can source anything. So I kind of can walk down a street and I'll clock everything.
Right.
I'm a professional shopper.
As inspirational, literally just to buy,
inspiration,
to then sell on?
What I like, what I don't. I mean, just I've always been like that, you know. I can spot stuff where people go, this is just, I can't see anything. I see everything.
Yeah.
It's just what I, so then I thought, well, okay, then I'm going to open a shop. And I love it because I travel with my business partner. We go to Marrakesh, Copenhagen, Paris, and we have a giggle.
Yeah.
And we design stuff too, so it's fun.
And I didn't mention her in the intro, but you've just mentioned her. Your mum was also a very successful West End...
Yeah, leading lady.
Leading lady.
Yeah, she was...
So tell us a bit about her.
So mum and dad met in Danny LaRue's club. Mm-hmm. And back in the day, my mum was a leading lady, and so she was leading lady for Tommy Trinder, Max Wall, the Crazy Gang. So she was incredible. She still is incredible. Most amazing singing voice, an amazing, beautiful woman, to be quite honest with you. She's 86 now. And we went to see Judy, the movie, last weekend, and came out singing Somewhere Over the Rainbow. My mum, she gave up. She had three babies. Andrew, mum and dad's first boy, didn't make it. He had a hole in the heart, and his heart on the wrong side. And then she had Emma, and then she had me. And I think it was so hard losing Andrew, obviously, that when she had the two of us, she just didn't really want to leave us. And so she kind of gave up. She always told me to keep my finger in the pie. So hence, when I had children, I've kept slightly working, because once you step right out, you can lose your nerve.
Mm-hmm.
But when mum and dad actually met, you know, they were equally successful. If mum might have actually been a tad more successful.
Yeah.
But also in her pulling back and letting dad flourish, because dad suddenly, his career suddenly took off, and then I was like 2 or 3 when it really started happening. Mum sat back, and I do think that's kind of been able to make Emma and me sane.
Right.
Because if you have two successful parents,
yeah,
you know, you need somebody at home, don't you?
Yes.
You know, so she, thank you know, and she says she doesn't regret it.
I was going to say, so you don't think there was ever any resentment there towards your dad for
her to... No, and he was the most amazing man. He was the most amazing husband.
Yeah.
And dad. You know, he was selfless when it came to us a lot. We were really important to him.
Yeah.
And we felt it, which is rare.
I think it's... the reason I ask is because I actually think it's rare for that kind of situation where at some point the person who gave everything up and was at home looking after the kids doesn't say, you know, that's because, you know, I wanted to do this, I wanted to do that. So the fact that it was very...
Yeah, it was, she got it.
Yeah.
You know, and we're all best mates, you know. So, and you don't get that, do you? You know, now we're... She does not regret it. She just said to me, if you can, keep your finger in the pie.
Yeah.
So that if someone asks you to do something, you don't think you're going to have a heart attack through nerves. You know, you've always keep it rocking a bit.
Yeah.
But, and I have, but, you know, it was different. Dad was really, really, really busy, and we just went everywhere with him, and that was only possible because mum could pack a van and make anywhere a home.
Yeah. So I asked this question of all of our guests. How did you feel when we approached you about coming on this podcast, about the topic, and is it something you find easy to talk about?
Well, I said yes, didn't I?
You did. Didn't force you.
No, you didn't force me. You know what? I'm really used to speaking in front of mics, obviously, through voiceovers. Mm. If you'd asked me a year after I lost Dad, I wouldn't have been able to talk about it. I'm only now being able to talk about it without welling up.
Yeah.
And I'm incredibly proud of him. So when you ask me, I just kind of... And also, I've got my own YouTube channel now. So I get...
Where can people find you on YouTube? Tell us
so
a bit
talk.
About it.
It's called So Talk. Mm-hmm. So it's So Talk Sophie Corbett, you'll find me. I've done 7 episodes on the menopause. I've got 4 episodes out on anxiety. I'm launching another 2. It's just about talking. I feel like people need to talk. I get worried with all the machines around that people aren't talking, and there's people that are lonely. And there's so many people struggling with different things. I just don't want anyone to feel alone, to be honest. And so I think it's about talking. So that's what I'm doing. So when you ask me, I also know how difficult it is to get people to trust you,
yep,
or to come on board and give you a helping hand.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm here, Barnaby. I'm here to talk. So it all kind of sat that I was very willing to come and talk about
yeah
my upbringing with my dad, who I miss hugely and felt really blessed to have had.
Yeah, and you touched on, you know, how regularly you are in front of microphones because your job as a voiceover artist.
Yeah.
You've got a very distinctive voice.
Yeah.
And obviously coming from a family of performers,
yeah.
I'm intrigued to know kind of how much you think that was nature, how much was nurture. Did your mum and dad kind of help you towards...
Talking properly.
I don't know whether it's talking properly or towards having a voice that you could then use as a career.
No, and... I think I'm just bored. You know, we've all... My dad had quite a deep voice.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, I was corrected if I went butter and not butter.
Yeah, yeah.
And I still do that to my kids, you know, so kind of...
Do they get embarrassed when you do it in front
elocution.
Of their friends?
Elocution. Ah,
you know... Because my mum did that.
Well, kind of, but you know what? I love my kids' friends really dearly. And I used to say, you know, they can come and stay the night and I'll cook them dinner and I'll drop you to parties and I'll pick you up, but if you're doing something wrong I'll correct you too, so that, you know, I won't, yeah, so no, yeah, they might roll their eyes, but
I assume they never
not
did.
When they get out of adolescence they get it,
yeah,
you know, Dylan
yeah.
who's 22 now,
yeah, and I assume they never did anything more wrong than dropping a consonant here or there.
That's,
so it
and
wasn't,
that's not that
so
big a deal,
a
is it?
Of course it's not. I think it's fair to say that you're our first guest whose famous family member could be described as a national treasure. And I wondered what it was like growing up with a dad who basically everybody adored so much and
yeah.
almost as much as you, probably, you know,
yeah,
if that's possible.
Well, yeah, no,
probably not.
Yeah, no, probably not. But it was fine. You know, I mean, it's all I knew. So people would say, oh, what's it like having a dad as Ronnie Corbett? We used to keep it really private, to be honest. Dad was also a really private man, so... Mm. Not everybody knew, but when people did find out, they'd say, oh, what's it like? And I'd say, well, what's it like? What's your dad do? What's it like having a dad that's an accountant?
Yeah.
You know, he was my dad. So it was an amazing, lucky, privileged upbringing, I'm sure, because
yeah.
we didn't go without. Dad was really, really tight on us not being flash or ever wanting us to be that. So we were never that. Or, you know, it was always watched and judged. You know,
yeah.
what we could have and what we couldn't have.
But
was that, we
was
were
that
really
frustrating
lucky.
Sometimes as a kid at all?
No. I felt really blessed, to be honest, because mm-hmm. I didn't go without. So what were they? So no, I just didn't know any other way. I mean, as I grew up and left home, I could see then that I had to queue for stuff. Didn't like that.
Right.
No, do you know what I mean? And so I had been used to a certain...
Because you'd be able to get into anything because...
Yeah, we didn't yeah. queue. I don't like... I hate queuing. I don't love anyone enough to queue, I've decided.
I hate queuing, but
yeah.
I'm now wondering whether there's something deep in my upbringing, like maybe I got into places and didn't realise why I was
maybe
getting in so quickly.
Maybe you did, you know what I mean? So you just go, you don't, I mean, I don't like queuing.
Yeah.
So what was the question again? Finally, I've gone off.
It's all right, no, it was, well, it started with, what was it like growing up with a national treasure as a father,
oh, yeah.
basically?
It was, yeah, really lucky. I mean, when he got older and a bit poorly, I got quite possessive then.
Mm.
And I said to him, you know, you need to not do something. You know, everybody wanted him.
Yeah.
Or a bit of him. And I was like, no, now get really selfish because we want you.
Yeah, that's quite a common theme amongst some of our guests, actually, is that they've never had resentment towards their famous family member, but sometimes they've had some slight issues with they haven't felt that they've got had enough time with them because they felt they've had to give time to so many other people as
well. I mean, we were really lucky. We are lucky. I mean, sometimes our house would be like the Sopranos. I mean, we don't keep what we feel in. We
okay.
say it.
Yeah.
So in that way, we were really lucky to be able to say, no, 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 no. You're not going. Please don't go there. Hang with me. Do you know what I mean? And,
yeah.
you know, and Dad got it. But that's the only time I've ever felt when I could feel Dad was getting older. And then I could feel he wasn't feeling 100%.
Yeah.
That's the only time in my life I ever felt like, no, can you all go away now?
Mm.
This is where we need to, you know.
Were they easy conversations to have, or
with my dad?
With your dad, or either other, or even other people who
were
around?
I didn't have it with other people. It actually just happened naturally.
Mm.
If you know what I mean, mm-hmm. he suddenly thought, I've done my bit of gallivanting, or you know,
yeah,
he was tired.
of performing for other people, or being there for other people rather than those closest to him.
Yeah, that's when he became poorly.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't feel 100% before they diagnosed him with motor neurons, so he became poorly. So that all kind of happened at the same time. But that's the only time in my life I have ever felt possessive about him.
Yeah.
Because other than that, we'd kind of be, if, you know, back in the day, we'd be going out with him. And as you say, he was adored. So all you got was people going, "Hi, Ronnie." You know, it was nothing. It was always positive.
Yeah.
So it was it always felt very up and buoyant. So you can't really be cross with that, can you?
No. And particularly then as a child, I'm interested to know, because that, I think to most people, that's quite an abnormal thought, the idea that you'd be out with your dad and people are stopping you all the time. Do you remember how it felt? Or whether that was so normal to you that it was...
We had quite good tricks up our sleeve, actually. He'd go, "Bunny, bunny, bunny." And that kind of meant, I don't know where the bunny came from, but that would mean getting deep in conversation with me so people won't butt in.
Oh, wow.
Right? So then you suddenly start looking and I'd be going, "Really, really? Well, why? And he'd be going, "Well, I don't know, because that's..." And we'd look like we were really intensely in conversation and people don't butt in.
Yeah.
So we had...
Bunny.
...ways of doing it so that we'd all... start talking very seriously.
Yeah.
And then sometimes
people won't wait.
No, they won't. They'd let you be.
So they won't butt in, but also presumably they won't wait, or it allowed you to walk away from the situation.
Yeah, we just looked like we weren't even, you know, we were talking very deeply. Oh, do not interrupt.
Bunny.
Yeah.
That's brilliant.
Wasn't bunny, it was rabbit.
Rabbit.
It was rabbit.
Okay.
So it was rabbit. And we go, okay. And then we just all
go. Oh, well, that makes more sense, because rabbit
thank you.
Is...
Yes, exactly.
Rabbit. Chaz and Dave before Chaz and Dave.
Yeah.
Just wondering, how have people treated you, if they have, treated you differently because of your father's fame down the years? Have you got any kind of specific examples or...
Well, do you know... People are very obvious when they're doing that, don't you think?
I think from my experience, it was always more in my head than actually kind of in reality. I would always fear that by saying... Specifically in professional situations, I would feel that if I was interviewing for something, and I remember one particular example where I was interviewing for a job in comedy, I think as a researcher or something, and I had got that interview because my stepdad Angus had known someone who'd seen my CV and got me in. So in the interview, then the person interviewing me said, "So who's your stepdad?" And I was like, "Well, you know the answer to this question."
Yeah.
And you're making me feel incredibly anxious about it. And I was just like, oh, I actually remember trying basically not to say.
No, it's terrible.
Which was a mistake as well. But so in that instance, I guess I was being treated differently because that person, I guess, was testing me on that side of how open and willing I'd be to talk about that side of my life. But in terms of other things where, you know, I used to think a lot, I wonder if people are... friends with me because I live in a big house and we have a tennis court. But the reality is probably it was way more in my head than because I was a kid than the truth, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you're a kid, you know, I'm trying to think. When I was a kid, did I think people liked me just be... Well, no, I don't think I did. I think auditions were hard to start with.
Because you followed into acting, didn't you? That was
singing and dancing and acting and all that malarkey. Yeah, and I felt sometimes that you had to double prove yourself. And then when you start auditioning when you're 16 or 17, you're like any other 16 or 17 year old. You know, So I felt sometimes you had to double prove yourself. And
we've had people on the show who've actually changed their names.
I did.
To try and get this.
I did.
Oh, okay.
I did. And then it makes me laugh. It was like a country and western singer now. So my mum gave up, didn't she, for me and my sister. Mm-hmm. So I thought her maiden name was Hart. And mum always wanted to call me Daisy. And dad said, "I'm really not having a girl called Daisy." So I thought for my mum, I'm going to show her. Mm-hmm. So I called myself Daisy Hart.
Yeah.
But then I'd be in auditions for Cats and things like that, and they go, "Daisy Hart," and I'd be like looking around, going, "Where?" And I go, "Oh my God, it's me!" And then Mum said, "You know what? It's so generous of you, and I'm so touched. But you know what? Your dad's worked bloody hard for his name."
Yeah.
So I went, "Yeah, you're right. I'm going to go back to Sophie Corbett."
So how long was Daisy Hart alive?
Not very long.
One audition where you forgot your own name.
Yeah, they were calling me and I was like not listening. No, I did it for like 6 months and then I thought, you know what, actually he has worked really hard and I am so his daughter.
Yeah.
You know, So no, and I think people sometimes who, I mean, again, we're really shy about it. We always go, they go, what did you, are you, you know, something comes up about being in the theatre and then they'll say, oh, what did your dad do? And we go, oh, he's a comedian. And they go, do we know him? And we'll go, well, yes, you might. And then what's his name? And then you go, you know, Ronnie Corbett. Mm. And my mum does it. We all do it.
Yeah.
Because it's just something's private, isn't it? But we're it's just a mixed thing. But I think that people who are friends of you, with you, just because of who somebody in your family is, make it very obvious.
Yeah.
There's only a few people that will, you know, back in the day would come up and go, how's your dad? You know, and I just want to go, mum's fine, thanks. So it's not subtle.
No.
And friends, great friends and friends, just not like that, are they?
I think, well, I imagine if you're anything similar to me or some of the people I've spoken to, you have a heightened awareness of trust and
yeah,
how easy it is to let people in. And therefore, you know, the people who get through those filters,
yeah.
you know, are
your
and
mates,
real friends.
And yeah,
you don't have to worry about that kind of
thank
stuff.
Thank God for them.
I've seen you've talked quite a lot about your dad being your hero. And that's a really common theme with people that we've interviewed here and that their famous family members, as well as their other family members, being heroes of theirs and idols.
Yeah.
I wonder if, you know, just briefly you could tell us why exactly he was like a hero to you.
Well, number one, because he was such an amazing... Well, I look at it now and I did a film for The One Show and they asked me to do a film about growing up with Dad when he was with me still. And they sent me all the kind of DVDs of the other people's films. And I couldn't believe how sad most of them were, to be honest, because most of their dads didn't live with them anymore. It is really rare to have, number one, somebody who's so successful in the business, still with the wife they were with for 60 years, still being, you know, making all the bread we ate. You know, he baked all the bread in the house. You know, I just look at it and I just think he was my hero because... To be work that hard, be that successful, but we've still felt that he was totally in our lives, is a pretty remarkable man, to be honest.
Yeah.
So yeah, he is my hero for so many different ways.
I mean, that's you know, take away the show business element, and that's just not very many men at all.
It really isn't.
It's a really incredible role model.
It's an incredible role model, and my kids, you know, look. I mean, my youngest said he's 14, and he said, you know what? You know, the thing about Papa was he gave 100% to everything he did. So if he was being funny, he'd be funny 100%. If he was being a dad, he'd be 100% a dad. And if he was being a papa, he'd be 100% a papa. And that's what he was like.
Yeah.
So we, you know, I sit here and I go, Goosey, and this is when I could well up. And that's the hole that's been left, you know, because, yeah, he was my hero for that reason. Because now I'm, you know, the age I am and... I see friends of mine that are married or not married or divorced or something. You know, I just think, lucky.
Just, you know, as a man on the flip side, I'd say also on behalf of your children and his grandchildren, that's quite something to live up to as a man.
Oh.
It's quite something to have to aspire to.
It really is. And be, you know, being a kid, you've had it. It is. It is something to live up to because... All we ever want is for our kids or me to fit. I wanted my dad to be proud of me. You know, I'm you the same. Mm. We're all the same. All we want is for our adult people in our life to go, well done.
Yeah.
I'm really, really proud of you.
Mm.
And actually, I tell my kids that all the time. Because in life also, it's not about, I mean, how amazing if you become successful. But it's talent, it's timing, it's luck, it's all those things. And I'm sure you know now, it's not about that. It's about being a decent human being, actually, is the best thing you can possibly be. And then hopefully earn a buck because it makes your life a bit easier.
Yeah.
But yes, it is difficult to live in those footsteps, but...
You'd rather it be that way than not have anyone to look up to.
Aspire to.
Yeah.
Yeah, most probably.
But yeah, just the main part of it to me that's incredible... And you've touched on it is that he had so many opportunities to use work or his success or busyness or anything as an excuse to not be present, but to see how important his presence was in his, you know, to his relationship to his children is
huge.
That's huge. Yeah.
He once said to me, "You've got to be selfish in life, Soph, but you've got to take your family with you."
Yeah, otherwise don't choose to have a family. Lots of my friends who have made decisions to have families and then trying to use excuses not to see them.
It makes me so cross because you don't understand what you're doing to the kids. Mm. You know, not being there for your kids. You know, it's a huge responsibility.
Yeah.
We'll all get it wrong somewhere along the line. You know, I'm sure I make mistakes. But I get really upset when I see that in life. And, they are children. They're just incredible. And they need the attention that... But I was very lucky.
Yeah. The good news is that podcasts about parenting are incredibly popular right now. So
the
fact that we've just talked about parenting for... Yeah, when I was working an ad company recently... brands were coming to us saying, look, parenting podcasts are the most popular podcasts at the moment. We need to do them.
Let's start one.
So let's put front and centre how much we talked to Sophie Corbett about our views on parenting. To go back to what it was like for you as a kid a little bit, I saw you talk about some memories about what it was like when the two Ronnies was at its peak. Were you about 13 when it started or when it was on?
Yeah,
talk about that sometime.
Yeah, no, we used to go and watch it in the studio with our cushions because the seats were so uncomfortable. And I was a kid, yeah. So I was little. I wouldn't go when I was little. I always wanted to.
Yeah.
I never wanted to be left behind. I was actually talking this morning. I was once in the car, and this is so funny. They were going out somewhere with my dad's younger sister, Maggie. I can't remember, somewhere, she was from Florida. She lived in Florida. They were going out, I got myself my party dress and my paint and shoes on the wrong feet, I think. And I had a handbag with a tissue in it and I'd done my hair myself. And I was about 4 and a half and I was sitting in the back of the car. I never really wanted to be left behind. That's the hardest bit I found, actually, when they were filming at night and I was too little to go.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we used to go to studios, but I can't really remember what age. It was probably from 11.
Yeah.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
I just wondered what it was like for you at school specifically and around other children who can be cruel.
Mm.
Having your dad on TV every week in one of the most viewed shows, and whether there were moments that was difficult, because I think to the outside world that seems like it would be the coolest thing, but I don't think it necessarily breeds that.
No, I mean, I think I was most probably lucky in the way I went to a school in Croydon for a few years. If dad did Panto or summer season, we'd go with him.
Mm-hmm.
So we went to different schools for a small amount of time. Which I found easier than my sister did, most probably.
Yeah, that sounds difficult. That would have been difficult for me.
Yeah, it was difficult for my sister. a bit harder for her than me. But see, I like people, so I don't mind that. And so we went to a school. Then we went to Australia for a year and a half because they filmed the two Ronnies in Australia for a year. They did a whole, which actually they're showing this Christmas in this country because I believe it's 50 years to the two Ronnies starting.
Right.
This Christmas, so they're going to show the Australian series. So we were in Australia for a year and a half, so no one really bullied us there.
Right.
And then we came back and I went straight to ballet school, okay. which I think might have made it a bit easier because it's all about the theatre. I was never really bullied.
Okay.
And I don't think my sister was bullied, actually, which is lucky.
But she just dealt with it in a different way because of her how her personality took that part of her life.
Yeah. Yeah, 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 yeah. She's now a counsellor and she's amazing at it. I was more, actually, the first college I went to, I was more bullied at and I left.
Okay. About because of that side of your life?
I felt it, yeah. I felt I was being punished before they knew who I was. And actually, because I'd been brought up to be humble, you know, and... You know, my dad was really grounded. His Scots roots never left, and we've all got those. So I was, you know, and it's all about being kind. You know, it's being. So I went in, and they wanted to slap me down.
Yeah.
But they hadn't realised I actually didn't need slapping down. I wasn't there.
So, yeah,
so they actually made me never want to ever hit the stage ever again. And
What age were you about when that happened? Like 15,
17.
16? Right. And do you think that was envy, bitterness and envy and jealousy from them?
Well, you know when you, I don't know, it really shocked me because I'd been at ballet school for like 7 years and had never had any of it. We were like a family. And it was that tough kind of love. It was so tough that it was horrific. And I've never, ever, I was like, I felt like thinking, who are you getting me where ready for? Because choreographers, directors... I've never met anybody who treated me anything like that,
yeah.
you know, in the business. So that was a terrible experience. And I left after a year and joined a rock band as a singer, which was my kind of rebelliousness to go, they really knocked my confidence.
Yeah.
And it took me 3-4 years to get it back.
What was your band called?
The first band was called The Chase and my second one was called Oceana. We were on Young, Gifted and Broke. And we, oh God, I love my band days. In fact, my... we're going back into the studio.
You're reforming?
Yeah, we are. We're reforming. And I can't wait. It's hilarious. I can't wait to see the boys. It was me and four boys, and we just had so much fun.
And so you rebelled by getting into rock bands, but was that...
I wasn't really rebelling. No. My dad used to come and see me at my gigs with his cloth cap on, kind of hiding in the back to support
me. Yeah.
But it's what I needed to do, actually, at the time. You know, and I loved it. I love singing. I think singing is a great therapy.
Yeah, absolutely. And so as we kind of touched on, you got into the show business, performing, entertaining, singing, etc. Do you think that's something that you would have done anyway? Like, do you think you would, that whether you had, you know, celebrity parents, performing parents anyway, or was it something because you idolized your father that happened to you? It was a chosen path because of what you saw.
No idea. I don't know. I mean, my mum is, you know, I mean, I'm surrounded by it.
Yeah.
I'm surrounded by it. So I really couldn't tell you. It's all I ever wanted to do. It's all I, you know, I felt comfortable. I think it's what I know, isn't it? Sitting in TV studios has kind of made me feel comfortable.
Yeah.
But my sister's the opposite. She hates having her photograph taken. You never see Emma anywhere. She always goes, go and speak for me. Go and speak for me. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
You know, so she's not comfortable in it, where I am
so
comfortable.
It can go either way. It's interesting. Are you the older sister?
No, I'm younger.
Okay.
I'm the youngest. Yeah.
See, that seems interesting to me naturally because you also then had someone to aspire to, you know, your sister who's older than you, who had completely railed against that side of things.
But I look at her now. I've actually started doing a course on counselling. I'm doing a counselling course. I'm going back to school. Not to be for me to be a counsellor, but because I think when I interview people and I talk, the more knowledge I've got and the better language around subjects, the better. But that's because I watch my sister do amazing work.
Yeah.
So I do kind of, you know, I do look up to her.
I've seen your dad written about as a perfectionist professionally. Is that something that's rubbed off on you?
Yeah. Yeah.
How does that manifest itself?
Just quite strict with ourselves, most probably. And if I'm doing something like you, you've got it all prepared, typed out there, I would have the same thing done.
It's all in my head. What are you
darling,
saying?
Oh, darling, sorry. It's all off the cuff. No, but that is, you know, you are speaking to me and not really looking at it, but just knowing it's there is preparation. Mm-hmm. And I'm all about the preparation. You know, Dad would prepare, and then just let it go. And that's what I do. That's what makes me feel comfortable. I can't do something unless I've prepared.
I think that, I think that's the only way you can ever, if you're not confident that you've got everything prepared, then I don't see how you can even know what, impossible to even ad lib or think off the cuff because you're so anxious about what you haven't prepared.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that is, yes, exactly. You can relax and think, right, I've got what I need, bring it on. You know, so yes, I am my dad's daughter in that way. And I loved, you know, it's like if you're going to cook a meal, cook it properly. My dad was an amazing cook. Well, my mum was an amazing cook, but my dad was an amazing cook as well. He won against Gordon Ramsay 4-1 for his crab linguine. So
Wait. Tell us all about that.
Yeah, so it was a television programme when you had to go up against Gordon Ramsay.
Really?
And
I need to dig
this
out.
And then there was judges that would taste it and go, that's a better one, that's a better one. And my dad stormed it.
Really?
But he was an amazing cook. I mean, finesse and so it's how things look and it's... It's like, if you're going to have a glass of wine, have a nice one and have one. Do you know what I mean? If you're going to make a beautiful dinner, you know, fresh, not too complicated. Just, he taught us to love simplicity and care about it.
I think that counts to all sorts of parts of your life. So not only culinary, but also in terms of his comedy as well.
You know? Yeah.
Do it simple, make it relatable, people will love it.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't try and be too clever by half.
No. The simplest is always the best, actually, isn't it?
Yeah, and I'm just thinking back to some of his most famous, their most famous sketches and his work, and that counts for all of that.
Yeah, and energy.
Yeah.
My God, the man had energy.
Yeah.
You know.
What was that show called? I need to watch that. I just want to see Gordon Ramsay get taken down a peg or two.
If you Google it, it will come out, won't it?
I will Google...
He's a charming man, you know, though. Mr.
Gordon.
Ramsay, yeah.
Oh, I don't doubt it. I do not doubt it.
It's like, all you need for the camera, isn't it?
You need persona in a kitchen as much as you need persona on a stage.
I couldn't work in a kitchen. I'd be in tears in 2 seconds.
Yeah.
I do not like being told off.
No.
Oh, I'd hate it.
Yeah.
They shout, don't they?
It seems to be quite bully, but almost like you have to accept that. That's just what it is.
Couldn't do that.
I've seen you talk about the Corbett face. Which is when you're talking about, I think, from what I got, if he was a bit angry or needed to tell you off.
A bit. No.
I'm intrigued for you to tell us a little bit more about the Corbett face, because certainly that's not something people would know about from his on-screen persona.
No. Well, you would, actually, because in Four Candles, it's the face he does at the end.
Right.
When he's like, are you joking me?
Yeah.
You know? And, oh, yeah. Luckily, yeah, no. You know, anyone would know they'd made a boo-boo. They'd get the face.
And I feel like there must be one particular occasion from when you were growing up where you did something that meant you suffered at the hands of the Corbett face. Can you?
Oh, God, I don't know.
Can you let on?
No.
Too bad.
No. He would just, you know what? My sister can do the Corbett face. My Auntie Maggie could do the Corbett face. I cannot do the Corbett face. It's just one of those faces... which is when you're really pissed off. And I didn't get it that much, actually. And I can't even think of when I've done, you know, but I'd see him do it to other people,
right.
Which would make, because it wasn't funny. You know, don't mess with him.
Yeah.
You know. So, once I was getting it slightly off stage and this was horrendous. So I've worked with Dad quite a few times in pantos and stuff like that, which was brilliant.
And you were his dresser once for a week or so, weren't you, on something? I saw you talk about that. You did some work.
No, this is the time, so yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And it was a last scene in something where he was taking a photograph of someone on stage, and the whole gag was he posed for the photograph, it didn't go flash, and then he'd step forward and it would flash. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So all in the timing.
Keeps missing the flash,
and this flash was a button. My mum's done this flash as well. We went, never again. Because you press the button,
yeah,
nothing works.
Right.
So he's on stage and it's not working. And I do believe I might have got a Corbett face then. And I was standing in the wings going, I can't do anything about it.
And in that,
it's the button that's not working.
It's, in that instance, it's the face that says you had one job.
No, it was just like, yeah, you had one job and you can't even do that. No, but yeah. So it was, you know, certain things that would, you know, wind Dad up. He hated people carriers. Don't pick him up in a people, you know. Things that they go, no, 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 I'm not getting in that, you know.
Right.
You might get the call of the face then.
What was his particular dislike of people carriers?
Well, you don't want to turn up in a people carrier, do you, and your dad? He thought they were clunky looking.
Right.
So not right.
About the
he was very classy. You know, he liked right. certain things, and he was just like, he also didn't like stand-up comedians when they wore ripped jeans and T-shirts, right? Just, mm-hmm. he wanted people to make an effort yeah. for certain stuff. That's what he was all about.
Yeah.
He'd say to me, don't sit down in what you're wearing on stage, and for God's sake, don't even dream of wearing it in the car.
Yeah.
On the way there. Do you know what I mean? That was him. That was his...
That feels quite generational. That feels like quite it was coming quite from a different generation of
and
performers.
And he'd say to comedians that because he was the hugest support of up and coming talent, hence Rob Brydon and Harry Hill and David Walliams all adored my dad because he'd be sitting at Edinburgh Festival watching them when they did their first show.
Yeah.
And support them. But he'd also say, could you not find an iron
yeah.
before the show? Because to him, he thought it was important.
Yeah.
You know, so people carriers he didn't like.
God, I know that if your dad had been watching me do stand-up and the feedback he gave me at the end was, could you not get an iron, I'd be so ecstatic that I'd think, oh, he didn't.
Oh, he'd also tell you how brilliant you were first and then yeah. he'd say, could you not find an iron?
No, but I mean, if that was the negative feedback, yes. then I'd be yes. absolutely yeah. Ecstatic. And it's a good point about Rob Brydon because Rob Brydon is... You know, he's clearly, your dad is clearly his hero. Like, he talks about your dad and as I've seen him with yeah. your dad on stuff.
He was really close to Dad and yeah. Dad was really close to him.
That's lovely.
Yeah.
It's really yeah. it's really great. The same with...
And Harry Hill, yeah. same, you know.
It's so great when comedians and performers cross those generational divides and you get the love from... It's the same with what happened with Bob Bunkhouse towards
yeah.
the end before he died. Just so many younger comedians coming up the generation saying, wow, he was a genius. Whereas only, you know, with Bob Bunkhouse, he went through a lull of doing game shows and everyone was like, oh, he sold yeah. out. But people realised by the end what a complete genius he was.
Yeah,
just so nice to
and
see that
stand-up.
Stuff.
He was very clever stand-up too.
Amazing.
You know, some people's stand-up doesn't come across so well on TV, you know what I mean? And then you see them mm-hmm. and you just can't breathe through laughing, you know?
Yeah.
It can cross over and it cannot sometimes.
I just think it just shows that when people are funny and geniuses, it doesn't matter what age they are.
No.
It doesn't matter what stuff they've done. It just matters that they've got the genes, you know?
Yeah, it's the truth. And it is about, you know, he was passionate about supporting young talent. And again, as you say, it kept, you know, he did some amazing sketches. When he did the extra sketch,
oh
my gosh, it was so funny. And he came home to mum and said, they've asked, you know, Ricky's asked me to do a sketch about being in a loo taking drugs. And mum went, well, you can't do that because you've never done anything like that. You know, Dad's always been clean. Two runners were always clean. Mm. And then he said, Moira Stewart's my drug dealer. And mum said, you've got to do it. You've got to do it. It was funny.
Can you remember the line? Because I think it's something no. along the lines of just a little bit to blow away the cobwebs or something.
Yeah,
about
something
cocaine.
Like. I mean, he's so good at looking guilty. He was the best at looking like he was in trouble. And it was so funny. And likewise, when he worked with Ben Elton, so he'd worked quite a lot with Ben Elton mm-hmm. on I think Ben Elton series. He did the chair. Or I can't remember something. And my mum and dad really started swearing because
okay.
he swears
yeah.
a lot.
Yeah, Ben does, yeah.
Yes. So they come home and they were like, fuck this, fuck that. And I was like, oh my God, I'm not sure about this Ben Elton's rubbing off of your language. But I can remember it vividly. It was so funny.
That's like a very strong, like, some, you know, when you spend time with people who have different accents, you start to
yeah,
pick up
do.
On their accent. But I've never known it where you just start swearing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because
he just kind of swore, you know, in a relaxed manner. So they started doing it. And I was like, oh my God.
That's brilliant. We've asked a lot of our guests about their relationship and memories of growing up with the press intrusion, stuff like that, and a lot of people having lies told in the press about their family or about themselves directly. I just wondered.
I was always brought up. Good question, by the way.
Thank you.
I was always brought up to be cagey with the press, don't answer anything. Luckily, Dad didn't really... He was so kind of liked and also led such a kind of crisp life in his personal life, thank God. So they didn't really have a lot to pick on him about or find out.
Yeah.
But saying that, there has been a couple of times when I really wanted to go into the newspapers with a baseball bat because they'd pick on my sister when she wasn't well.
Right.
I mean, that's and Danny LaRue, they did a really awful. When he lost all his fortune, and he was our godfather, and you know, there's certain real people, and you think you're really going to print that, and so it really didn't happen often, but when it does happen, it's very upsetting.
Because what you said about your dad being, you know, clean cut, having a life of which they couldn't really find much to. We couldn't really dig and find much out about him. That kind of makes it especially surprising to me that they'd find out, find and follow a story about your sister who has no desire to be in public eye and isn't in the public eye at all. That seems even more appalling than most of the stories I've heard about.
Yeah, and appalling. And she was at that time, and she's now learned to live with it. But she was suffering with depression, and. Yeah, I really wanted to go and smash an office up.
What stopped you?
Because I get very protective.
What stopped you from actually maybe not smashing them up? But yeah, so you had that conversation.
Yes. I mean, I've never smashed anything up. I mean, you know, the biggest thing I've done is thrown an anthropology mug across the room. But I mean, I really was angry because they were hurting my sister, who was already hurting.
Yeah.
And my dad and Ronnie B, actually it was Ronnie B, always said, do not rise.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Do not rise. The moment you rise, you're making it bigger because tomorrow it'll be fish and shit paper. Mm. And he used to say that. And so then Dad said that. And then I sat there and went, okay. And I speak, you know, all kind of wide and like a gangster. I'm sure I wouldn't have gone in with a baseball bat, but I was really cross because it was all crap.
And if you rise to it, it gives them permission to keep writing as well.
Well, it does, doesn't it? So you're always best. It might really hurt is to go, you know,
that's awful.
Light a fire and put the newspaper on it.
And you mentioned Ronnie Barker there. So what was your relationship with him going out? How much was he around the family home and, you know?
Oh, a lot. I mean, not so much in the family home because he lived the other side of London. So he was more Chipping Norton and we were more Addington near Croydon. So you couldn't have more opposite.
Right.
But
was that on purpose, do you think?
No, not on purpose. I think that's just where they grew up and where they landed.
Yeah.
They kind of... When I was born, Mum and Dad lived in Crystal Palace, so they were south and he was always north. They adored each other. You know, they were like brothers.
So personally and professionally.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So rare in double acts, I think.
So rare.
Yeah.
Again, so lucky. Yeah, they really did. They did. So he was like an uncle, you know. He was like growing up with Uncle with Ronnie B., you know, we all went to Australia together. We'd see a lot when they were filming and when Two Ronnies was filming because it would be like six, 7 months doing that and then the rest of the year was off where Dad would do stand-up and Ronnie B would do whatever he was doing, whether it was porridge or something like that. So they'd be really intensely together for 7 months and then they'd clear off. And then if Dad was doing anything else, he'd always ping Ronnie B the script to have a look at because Ronnie B was just the most
amazing.
And he'd say, what do you think? And he'd say, well, maybe change that line up. That could be a bit funnier doing that way around. So he'd always show Ronnie B a script.
That's so cool because also, you know, firstly it shows ultimate trust, but secondly it shows that there's no kind of what I see in a lot of double acts, you know, from the last 10, 15, 20 years is they get to a point, they've done something incredibly successful together and then they get to a point where like, well, I want to prove that I can do something amazing without this person and I'm not just great because of this person as well.
Mm.
And they go off and they do something that is often not very good.
No.
And then they're striving to prove over and over and over until eventually, I think, they end up getting back together and proving that actually that teamwork was what made them so good. But there was none of that even when they did their own projects.
No.
They were helping each other too. That's so great.
Yeah, they were. And they only ever had nearly one row in 25 years and that was because of This Is Your Life.
Okay.
Because they were going to do it on my dad and Dad did not think it was very funny. When Eamon Andrews was going to walk in.
Right.
And he was saying to Ronnie Barker, well, this isn't funny. And Ronnie Barker was going, well, I think it is funny, because he knew.
But I was surely your dad's not supposed to know what happens at the beginning of This Is Your Life.
Well, he didn't know
surprise.
It was This Is Your Life. It was a sketch all around, a joke about This Is Your Life. Dad was like, that's not funny. And Ronnie Bean knew it was actually because Eamon Andrews was going to walk in and say to Dad, this is your life. And so they nearly... And he came home to Mum and said, well, I don't know what Ronnie B's talking about. It's not funny. And Mum said, well, maybe this time, darling, just let it go.
She's having to play the game
as well.
Yeah, she's
trying to go, calm down. Look, you're lucky. It's normally brilliant. Just so he went, OK, I'll let it go. And then Eamon Andrews walked in and he went, you bastard. I knew it wasn't funny, you know. But that was the only time they ever had words. I mean, slightly.
But that shows how well they know each other that it's like, it was so uncomfortable to your dad that Ronnie B would ever allow something
to
happen.
No, he was like, what is going on?
Must have been something on.
And they luckily, you know, and you do meet people like that, don't you? They sung from the same song sheet, so they agreed on everything.
Mm.
And they knew that their talents were different. But together, they were brilliant.
Yeah.
And then doing their own thing, they were brilliant.
Yeah.
And they never... You know, and my dad was they were both very cool individuals. It was like the time Ronnie Barker said to Dad, you know, he took him to side and said, you know, my heart's not great. This is it. Mm. This will be the last time I do this.
Mm.
And he said it to my dad 9 months or I think a year or 9 months before he told anybody else. So he wanted my dad to have that and time to go, okay. And Dad just went, okay, you know. He was a chicest man, you know. Even to the day when he got poorly, he was accepting of anything that was thrown at him. So his acceptance, he didn't over argue stuff. He just kind of swallow it down. You know what I mean? He'd just go okay, he did that when, you know, it might, some people, they might find that very difficult with your partner, you know, but Ronnie B's health was failing and they said, you're either going to have to, you know, you have to take a step back and not give 100%. Well, you can't do this business and not be 100% in, can you? But Dad was also an incredibly accepting individual.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like he took that information in exactly the way he knew that Ronnie would want him to deal with it.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's incredibly respectful as well,
yeah.
Because also a lot of people, when they find out, they find out other people's very personal business, can take it in a selfish way and make it all about them.
Yeah, and he never did.
Amazing.
No, yeah, he was quite amazing. Yeah.
You've touched upon how your dad died and motor neuron disease, and from what I've seen a little bit, it seems to me like you want to use what you've learned from that to try and help other people.
Yeah.
Just wanted to give you a forum in case you want to talk about to talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. I really want to do a night, actually. I want to try and do a night at the Palladium called Stand Up to Motor Neurons. Wow. Well, that was a huge lesson, watching someone you adore be so poorly for so many different reasons. But again, yeah, well, it just shows you that we're really not in control of anything, are we? And that's frightening, can be frightening. But again, he was so accepting. I was with him. We all, you know, it was horrendous and horrendous to watch and horrendous for him. But he never rowed it. And I remember sitting in the bathroom with him a week before we lost him and just saying, you're still teaching me. You are the chicest human being I will ever know, because you're sitting there and you're having a nightmare and you're just accepting. And actually, that's a great lesson to everybody, you know. And motor neurons losing anybody is really tough. It was really tough. But we were really blessed, and we are really blessed that we were all really close and we were all there, and we took turns in doing night shifts. And it was terrible, and it was terrible for him, but we were at least able to show him how much we really cared.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You know, we could show him we loved him beyond.
Yeah.
And he felt it, and we were all there. And so, yeah.
I mean, that sounds like, to me, based on what you've told me about him, then the natural response that he would get from his family based on how he's brought you all up to be.
Yes.
And how important family and love and being there for each other when things aren't great.
Yeah. Because
just as well as it is when they are great.
Exactly. Exactly. it's a night, yeah, it made me grow up all over again, you know. And it's, yeah, it's really hard losing someone you love. Mm. It is really hard. And we're all going to have to go through it.
Yeah.
But somebody said to me, grief is the price you pay for love. And I think that really helps.
Mm-hmm. And what can we do to help you get this Stand Up for Mojo Neurosis going? I've run lots of gigs before. I can.
Okay, email. I need to speak to Lord. I need to speak to Lord Webber first, don't I? About the.
I think that would be a good start. I think he could probably help.
Yeah, about the venue, because to me it really makes sense. Mum goes to me, "Oh, Sophie, is it not a bit big?" And I'm like, "But we've got to go big." And also, the Palladium is my dad.
It has to be the Palladium.
It does,
of
doesn't it?
Absolutely. Of
and then,
it does.
And then I have. But also, to that's, go. That's the first time I've said it to a microphone. So I actually sat here and I thought, shall I say it? Well, and I think because I want to raise money for motor neurons. Because again, people don't. It's motor neuron actually. Mum always corrects me. I'm dyslexic right. And I say things wrong all the time. It's motor neuron. Because all you ever think of is Stephen Hawking, isn't it? And you know what I mean. And that's all I thought of. But they were amazing, and the NHS were amazing in their support. So I really would like to one-off earn a chunk of money to go and help people, because Dad actually was really late in life to get it. Some people get it in their 40s,
yeah,
with children and family and the support that comes in. So again, it would be really good to do.
It would be great for, I think...
And cathartic. I would find it cathartic.
But also amazing for awareness. And I think naturally, like you said, the Palladium is forever linked with your dad.
Mm.
And that's where the story is in terms of PR as well. So, you know, because they want to hang things on things. So, you know, it's organized by, curated by his family.
Yeah.
And it's at the venue. And then presumably we'd get your Rob Brydens, we'd get your Harry Hills
Hopefully.
To perform. They'd help push it and get other people on. So the fact that you may not have said it to a microphone before, but the fact that you've said it here just makes it, I think, often
round the corner from the Palladium,
and we're round the corner. But often things take one step to get the ball rolling. So even if this is a tiny little step towards getting that ball rolling, then I think it's a fantastic idea, and you should absolutely do it. We always ask everyone whether you think your father's fame has affected your personal relationships in any way, whether. Your experience of growing up around that lifestyle, I guess. Although the fact that your dad was pretty clean cut probably meant there wasn't a great deal of that lifestyle to see. But whether you think fame has affected your personal relationships in any way?
Oh, you'd have to ask my personal relationships that. They've got a lot of people, the men in my life have got a lot to live up to, haven't they?
Yeah.
Most probably.
Mm-hmm. But that sounds to me, that's more in terms of his brilliance personally as a man rather than anything professional that could be. I mean, I wonder if to the men in your life, the fact that your dad was Ronnie Corbett's pretty intimidating.
Yeah, maybe.
In terms of how could I ever be as successful as her dad kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Men are pretty pathetically basic like that, I'm afraid.
Well, they have to get over that, won't they?
Well... Do they?
No idea. I'll ask. I don't really know that answer, to be honest. Mm-hmm. Most probably is quite intimidating. Well, people do find it difficult, don't they, living up to somebody who's succeeded really well in anything.
Mm.
But that's just life.
Deal with it.
Yeah.
What is the most unusual thing that you think's ever happened to you as a result of being Ronnie Corbett's daughter? Can you think of anything?
Oh my gosh, see, now I wish you'd told me a few questions beforehand, because then I could have thought.
I know, but I think I kind of prefer it because this way, the first thing that comes to the top of your head feels more real than going through a file of facts or a Rolodex, is what I'm trying to say, of thoughts that you've thought over for a week.
Yeah, unusual.
Yeah, let me try and have a think of things people have said in this instance.
I got kissed by a sea lion.
Right, there you go. I don't think...
Dad got kissed by a killer whale.
Talk us through this, please.
Oh, my...
Hold on. This can't... The sea lion didn't know your dad was Ronnie Corbett, I'm assuming.
No, but the people that owned the Sea Life Park, which I don't think is there anymore, rightfully so.
Yeah, right.
But this was like back in the day when we were travelling to Australia and I was like 9. And they put Dad on the highest... diving board, and this killer whale circled the pool three times and then leapt into the air towards my dad, who on the third, you know, diving board looked quite small compared to the killer whale. And he had to lean...
and because he was Ronnie Corbett.
And because he was dad. And he had to lean forward. And this killer whale just came up and just went tiny on his lips and then back into the swimming pool. And then they didn't want us to feel left out. So out came these old sea lions with fishy faces. Yeah. And we had to kiss them. That's off the top of my head, the surrealist thing I can think of.
That is quite surreal. I mean, I just want to add a layer. I doubt it's true, but please tell me that the entire park was shut just so that you could go around it on your own.
No, everyone was watching.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
That is definitely a better story than if I told you that question in advance. You would have come up with something way more thought about, I think.
Yeah, no.
Having been kissed by a sea lion.
On my way home, I'll think of something and go, damn.
So we always end on the same question.
Mm-hmm.
I think I know the answer. I feel confident. But if you could live your life all over again, but without having had a famous father, would you swap?
Not in a million years, Barnaby.
Yeah, I felt pretty confident about that
as
well. It's been a really lovely chat. Thank you so much
Aww.
For coming in. Please use this opportunity to plug everything you want. So talk a bit more about your shop or your YouTube channel and give people the opportunity to follow you wherever they can.
Yeah, thank you. That's very kind. Yeah, YouTube channel called So Talk. Mm-hmm. I'm Sophie Corbett and my channel's called So Talk. My shop is Four Candle Shop. We're on tour, so we'll be popping up all over the place. So we do have an Instagram.
Okay.
Four Candle Shop and a website. So do come and join us and support us. We've got some really nice gear. But So Talk, yeah, if anyone's struggling with anything, message me on So Talk and I will get back to you.
Yeah, and you talk to your friends about those important topics, like you said, menopause, anxiety.
Yeah, but so friends and then specialists.
Okay.
And then people that want to talk. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'll talk about a subject and then I'll bring people in that kind of know what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. So we might be able to answer some of the questions. So right. I speak to people who are having it and feeling it, and then I'll get people in to talk that either nurses or doctors or, you know, that actually do it and try and find some answers. You know, I just think it's really important.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much again for coming on, guys. Make sure you press the subscribe button to the Almost Famous podcast and drop us a comment and tune in for the next episode. Thanks so much.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.